Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
So at ESMO, they also showed the final analysis of the Destiny Pan-Tumor 2 trial. So this was that phase 2 trial across multiple HER2-expressing solid tumors in the pre-treated setting. So not first line, but patients who were refractory. And overall, the trial showed an impressive close to 40% confirmed response rate in GU cancers.
Today, Drs. Mantia and Berg join the podcast to discuss HER2-positive genitourinary cancers, targeted therapy highlights from ESMO 2025 in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Welcome back to the next part of our discussion, ESMO 2025.
I'm Charlene Mantia. I'm a medical oncologist specializing in genitourinary cancers here at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, Massachusetts, and an instructor in medicine at Harvard Medical School.
And I'm Stephanie Berg. I'm also a medical oncologist. I work with Charlene at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. I'm also an instructor of medicine at Harvard Medical School.
So thank you for joining us. It's been a couple of months since ESMO 2025, and we've now had some time to look over all of the new data that came out, and I'm especially excited about some of the targeted therapies for HER2-positive urothelial carcinoma. Stephanie, do you want to chat about some of the data?
Absolutely, Charlene. What are some of the trials that you thought about?
So at ESMO, they also showed the final analysis of the Destiny Pan-Tumor 2 trial. So this was that phase 2 trial across multiple HER2-expressing solid tumors in the pre-treated setting, so not first line, but patients who were refractory. And overall, the trial showed an impressive close to 40% confirmed response rate in GU cancers. And so we're obviously interested in the urothelial carcinoma population. But it also showed good responses in endometrial cancer, cervical cancer, and biliary tract malignancies. This is what led to the FDA approval of trastuzumab deruxtecan, which again is a HER2 ADC, but using a topoisomerase 1 payload. And so overall in the trial, the median progression-free survival was about 7 months, and the median overall survival was just over 1 year at 13 months. And this was across all tumor types. The median duration of response was 11 months. Looking specifically at HER2 3+ patients, it was actually 22 months, which was really impressive. And the safety was similar to other studies with trastuzumab. So there were no new signals. Mostly we're seeing for grade 3 side effects, mostly neutropenia, anemia, fatigue. And so this drug is approved in the United States for all HER2 3+ cancers. Looking specifically at the urothelial carcinoma population, we saw close to a 40% response rate in all patients. And then in the HER2 3+ patients, we had an impressive 56% response rate. And so I think this is a great option for urothelial carcinoma patients. And I'm always excited when I see that a patient has HER2 3+. It really emphasizes the importance of checking for that in all advanced urothelial carcinoma patients.
I do myself. It's something that when they're past, a frontline enfortumab, vedotin, pembrolizumab, chemotherapy, we can bring in HER2 targeted therapies like T-DXd, hopefully earlier. And that was great to see that approval and this final data presented, because it's something I know it's on our current guidelines and like we're talking about today, to really encourage getting that IHC to checking for it for your patients to see if they are candidates for the T-DXd.
What else did you note in urothelial carcinoma at ESMO?
So the one trial that I thought was pretty interesting and not something I know you and I as medical oncologists really deal a lot with at this time because of it's in non-muscle invasive urothelial cancer, but now that they're bringing in immunotherapy agents, and this one was actually called Formula 01, which was a phase 2 trial, bringing back again the other ADC that we mentioned, disitamab vedotin, which I forgot to say before has that payload similar to our favorite urothelial drug, enfortumab vedotin with the MMAE. So this was looking at HER2 positive high risk patients, and they combined it with our standard BCG, which again is done by our urologists. So they were actually BCG naive, and this was post complete TURBT for patients to go on. So we know that in non-muscle invasive cancers in the bladder that they can actually have high HER2 expression. This has been reported more in the literature, about a third, and they can actually have more BCG failure compared to non-HER2 expressing non-muscle invasive cancer. So this was a really sound rationale for these investigators. They were from China to really look at this population. This was actually enrolled pretty well. I mean, 78 patients. They all underwent a complete TURBT. They all had the standard high-risk non-muscle invasive bladder cancer based on our AUA-SUO guidelines. There was no really CIS included. This was all pure urothelial cancers, no subtypes. And they had to have at least a 2-plus or 3-plus expression. BCG naive as well. And actually, most patients ended up having a 2-plus expression like we were talking about before. That's kind of the majority where we see our patients anyway, 2-plus and 3-plus. So they received the DV drug every 2 weeks for 8 cycles, along with a standard BCG for over 1 year. The primary endpoint was a 2-year DFS, but the authors noted that he actually saw a complete response of 100% of the patients at 3 months, and then still 100% at 6 months. And then even the 6-month event-free survival was 100%. And they noted at least the 12-month disease-free survival was over 90%. And we know with standard BCG with high-risk patients, this is at 70% at best. And it's something I know they're trying to bring in more, like immunotherapies that have been coming out, like sasanlimab is one of them that I know has been recently reported from the CREST study. But it's really interesting for a biomarker-directed therapy. One thing we have to recognize, though, in non-muscle invasive, BCG is usually pretty well tolerated. So when you add in an ADC like DV, you're going to see some adverse events like neuropathy, again, similar to enfortumab vedotin, fatigue, and rash. They said about 13% of patients had these, but 13% had grade 3 to 4. But most of them were, as we can say, well tolerated in the sense that, you know, it wasn't a treatment that lasted very long, but, you know, they did experience some toxicity. So this was great because it was a biomarker-directed bladder sparing option for patients who had great responses. And it's really the first prospective study to demonstrate how we can combine an ADC plus BCG to have these really excellent outcomes for these high HER2 expression. So I'm really hopeful that we can see this in the future. And the DV didn't actually delay any BCG administration. And again, the safety was pretty manageable for these patients. And it's something I think we can look forward to for this population, because that I know that that whole area has really exploded, and it's bringing medical oncology into the urology world, how we can better prevent these patients from becoming muscle invasive cancer, which is what you and I treat most.
Yeah, exactly.
What about for you?
Yeah, I think just for that study, like you said, it's important to really focus on, you know, the safety of it and make sure when you're treating patients who are curable with surgery that, you know, when we're not causing a lot of harm. But it's really exciting because we may be sparing a lot of patients from undergoing a cystectomy or having, you know, advanced bladder cancer. And so I think it's great that we're getting really effective treatments that are moving earlier on, and especially when we have biomarkers to really direct that and make sure we're treating the right patients.
Absolutely. Any other trials? I know there's one big one that was at ESMO that has a very nice paper out as well.
We saved the best for last.
We did.
One of the most exciting studies at ESMO overall, and happened to be in urothelial carcinoma, was the RC48C016 trial, which was the presidential symposium by Dr. Jun Go. And so this was a large phase 3 trial conducted in China, looking at disitamab vedotin plus toripalimab versus platinum-based chemotherapy with gemcitabine in first-line HER2-expressing locally advanced or metastatic urothelial carcinoma. And this was a really exciting study that had really impressive results. And so we saw a median progression-free survival of 13 months with DV plus toripalimab versus 6.5 months with chemotherapy. And so this drug reduced the risk of progression or death by over 60% in this patient population. And so again, very similar to EV Pembro, we saw a really impressive median overall survival benefit. And so the DV plus toripalimab, it was 31 months compared to about 17 months with chemotherapy. And again, similar to EV Pembro, we had a really high objective response rate. So 76% with DV plus toripalimab compared to 50%, which is pretty standard with chemotherapy. And the median duration of response so far is 14.6 months with DV plus toripalimab versus just over 5 months with chemotherapy. So very impressive results. I didn't think we would see a regimen that would rival EV so soon, but very exciting that we're getting really active drugs in this disease. And this regimen was also pretty well tolerated. And so as you discussed before, this is an ADC, you know, targeting HER2, but with an MMAE payload. And so we're seeing some of the same side effects of EV. So for grade 3 treatment-related side effects, that happened in about 50% of patients. This is lower, actually, in the trial than chemotherapy, which was closer to 86% of patients. They looked at, you know, a subgroup analysis, and really the benefits in PFS, OS, and response rate were consistent across all the subgroups, including our standard cisplatin-eligible and ineligible patients, and they saw it across all HER2 expression levels, so 1+, 2+, or 3+. I think of note, what was really impressive in this study is that about 40% of patients who had chemotherapy went on to receive HER2-directed treatment after as subsequent therapy. And so I think the improvement in overall survival is actually probably underestimated. And so I think this is obviously a great regimen. I think some of the questions now are, this was conducted in China. We don't really use toripalimab here. And how? What is the path to regulatory approval here, you know, in the United States? It's obviously a very active drug, something we're going to be, you know, wanting to use. But how do we get access to that, and when will that happen here?
I agree with you. I think it's something, like we were just talking about the timing-wise of when we're checking HER2. And since we are doing it in the beginning, if we are faced with a decision, which is wonderful for our patients, if there's something equivalent, or we don't know if it will be superior to our standard EV plus Pembro, to bring that in. But I know we've been talking about this as well, about if you have two drugs with the same payloads, is that going to be appropriate to sequence therapies for patients if they progress? And in the same we can talk about for a long time as we have in kidney cancer and other cancers about rechallenging with immunotherapy. And it'll be an interesting way of how we conduct our trials in the future about sequencing and doing these and doing targeted therapy, and how our own, what we talked about, the TDXD already approval has been approved, and if that's how that's going to play a role if DV does get approval. But it was great. I mean, it was a lovely New England Journal paper that, you know, we both read, and it's pretty amazing to see this come through and what you described about the outcomes. I was kind of blown away by it.
Yeah, me too. I think, you know, they're both really active drugs, and there's not a great way to sort of distinguish which one to use when. You know, I think the toxicities are pretty similar, right? Disitamab vedotin doesn't have the Nectin-4, you know, as a target, so there's a little bit less rashes, maybe a little bit more, you know, liver toxicity. But overall, both are pretty well tolerated, and I don't see many patients that wouldn't be able to receive both. And so, like you said, I think, you know, sequencing therapies is going to be our big question going forward. And, you know, if you have a HER2 3+ patient, you know, which one would you choose, you know, as first line or relapsed, will be an ongoing question. And, you know, there's obviously some studies ongoing in the United States looking at this drug combined with pembrolizumab and in other disease settings, which will be really exciting to see.
I agree. It's always what, as we always say, try and enroll your patients in clinical trials if possible, because there's a lot more coming down the pipeline, and it's a great time for urothelial cancers in general. We didn't have a lot of things going on for quite a bit, so this has been such an exciting past few years to see all these new therapies come for our patients.
Definitely great. Well, thanks for joining me today, Stephanie. This has been really great. And thank you for joining us for our discussion on the evolving data we saw at ESMO to how it may influence our approach to HER2-positive urothelial carcinoma in practice.
And that's today's special spotlight. Thank you for joining us for the episode of PureDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PureDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PureDirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing, Medical News Roundup, and just ask, what's my Flash Briefing? Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Mantia and Berg. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.